This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, welcome back to The Morning Run. I'm Roshan Kanasin with Noel Lim and Kusu Chuang in the studio this morning. Like every other day in the weekday, we've got the breakfast grill at 8 a.m. Noel, what's happening today?
I was listening into a conference yesterday, and one fund manager said this: the strong will survive, but the weak suffer what it must. You know, really, the world is a very unforgiving place for the poor, right? So in Malaysia, up to 80% of Malaysians are living from hand to mouth. We only want a 2 month savings, and this is a figure that was given by EPF. So as the poor are bearing the brunt of this economic crisis, I'll be speaking to Noor Hisham Hussain, who's the Chief Strategy Officer at EPF, and Ahmad Yazid Osman, the CEO of MTEM, which is the Majlis Tindakan Ekonomi Melayu. If the government is doing enough to help the poor, and how can it be, you know, how can the government be more effective?
Sounds super interesting, actually. As something I want to definitely pay attention to, and something that's really relevant to a lot of people in the country, and not just the country, actually across the globe. This is something we're seeing about right now. Speaking of the globe, over the weekend, UK Prime Minister Boris Johnson announced his strategy to gradually ease the country out of lockdown. Under the new rules for England, people with jobs that can't be carried out at home are encouraged to go back to work. For the first time, the government also advised people to wear cloth face coverings when travelling on public transport or entering enclosed spaces. And primary schools will reopen from June, although parents who choose not to send their children to school will not face fines.
I think really the big issue here for the UK, there has been massive pushback against the new rules in regards to its clarity and messaging. There was no consensus in the messaging on how the difference in policies between the UK government and those in Wales, Scotland and Northern Ireland. And so I think trade unions are also raising concerns that the instructions are coming in too late.
Yeah, I think communication is of the utter essence when it comes to things like this. Now, we speak to Patrick, for more on this, we speak to Patrick Diamond, Associate Professor of Public Policy at the Queen Mary University of London, for insight into the impact of these rulings on the Boris Johnson administration. Now, Patrick, thank you so much for joining us on the line this morning. There has been a lot of pushback and criticism regarding the exit measures recently announced, coupled with the earlier missteps in the handling of the pandemic. How has this impacted Boris administration, as well as people's perception towards him?
So at the moment, if you look at the indicators of public opinion with regards to trust in the government and also satisfaction with Boris Johnson's performance as Prime Minister, the general picture is that the UK public have remained broadly supportive of both the government and Boris Johnson personally. Having said that, there obviously are beginning to be there was the beginning of a discussion about whether the government has handled these issues as well as it could have done and should have done. So one aspect of that, as you just inferred, is about how prepared was the government for the pandemic. There's also concern about the handling of particular issues, one of which is care homes, where, along with some other Western European countries, the UK death rate partly reflects a very high rate of infection and death within care homes. So there's a feeling that that particular sector of the public health care system was not well handled. And there is also a sense that in the last 2 weeks or so, government communications have been somewhat unclear, and that the messages around the easing of the lockdown have been difficult for people to understand exactly what the government is requiring them to do. So that may also contribute in the medium to long term to a potential decline in trust and confidence in the current government and also in Boris Johnson as Prime Minister.
Yeah, and Patrick, as if things are not confusing enough, Scotland, Wales and Northern Ireland have declined to revise their lockdown rules. How does this reflect on the unity, supposedly, of the United Kingdom government?
Yeah, it's a reflection of a constitutional ambiguity about, obviously, what issues or what policy concerns fall under the remit of the UK government and which policy decisions are those that are reserved for governments in Wales, Scotland and Northern Ireland. In some ways, it's not so unusual. Germany, which obviously has a federal system with different regional governments, has taken a regional approach to managing the pandemic. So certain regional governments will impose somewhat different lockdown restrictions according to local requirements. So if there's a particular outbreak or hotspot of the disease, then obviously a regional government can impose conditions that would not be in place in the rest of the country. And there is something similar to that emerging in the UK. But there is a concern, I think, that if there are not UK-wide measures, then this will lead to a further lack of clarity. And also that if, for example, people go back to work early in England, that this will force Welsh or Scottish workers to go back prematurely in ways that may lead to lives being endangered or to problems being created. There's a particular concern that in Scotland, the infection rate is higher than it is in the rest of the UK. So the Scottish government wants to be able to continue with a very strict lockdown measures. But going back to what I was saying earlier, the government, certainly in England, does not feel that it can continue with the lockdown as it is, partly because of economic concerns. I mean, another issue is schools, where English schools look set to reopen at the beginning of June, but the Welsh, Scottish and Northern Irish governments have said that the school systems will not reopen until the new school year in September. So there clearly is an obvious pattern of divergence here, where England appears to be going in a somewhat separate direction to other nations within the UK.
I am wondering, you know, what's the bigger picture here? I mean, what does this mean for the relations between the different governments?
Well, in terms of relations with those other governments, obviously tensions are not going to go away. There is a longer term question. There has been a question really bubbling away for at least the last decade about whether certainly Scotland may choose to separate itself completely constitutionally from the rest of the UK, become independent. The chances of that happening may have increased as a consequence of the shocks inflicted by the pandemic, both economically and on the health system and on society more generally.
Patrick, what about Boris Johnson's position in the administration? Has this shaken up his premiership?
In terms of Boris Johnson's position within the administration, while his position at the moment is reasonably secure because there is no desire to stir up difficulty for the government at a time of national crisis, it's certainly not impossible that there will be a tide of growing dissatisfaction with the government, which leads to some instability around Boris Johnson's premiership. Within even the ruling Conservative Party itself, there is some anxiety about Boris Johnson's performance. There are some Conservative MPs who take a view not dissimilar to the Trump administration in the United States, who argue that the lockdown has been far too restrictive and that the economy should be opened up much more quickly. And they are critical of Boris Johnson for being too cautious in his approach. On the other side, there are another group of Conservative MPs who feel that the health pandemic has not been well handled, that the government has made a number of major mistakes, that it's not demonstrated sufficient competence. Many of these figures are former ministers from the Cameron administration, which of course ceased in 2016. But those figures who are still around believe that Boris Johnson's government has mishandled many of the aspects of the coronavirus crisis. And so, yeah, you can see the beginnings of stirring of major opposition within the Conservative Party towards Boris Johnson's handling of this crisis, which if he isn't able to control, you know, may in the longer term result in serious instability around his premiership and his future as Prime Minister.
Yeah, and finally, Patrick, do you think Boris Johnson's brush with COVID-19 impacted his policymaking?
Well, there is a sense that it has made him more cautious in some respects. As I was saying, there are some Conservative MPs who feel that the government has been too cautious in its approach, that it's exaggerated the risks of the coronavirus outbreak, and that it's not been sufficiently willing to drive the economy back into life. And part of that is attributed to Boris Johnson's personal experience, obviously having been hospitalised with the coronavirus, that's made him more cautious. Certainly, it's also made him even more inclined to express his admiration for the health system. And of course, it's also made, to some extent, the views of voters more sympathetic towards him. I think the fact that the public could see that he had himself had the virus increased the level of empathy and sympathy for him among the voting population. However, obviously, we are very much in the middle of the crisis at the moment. And so it's very easy to explain why public trust would remain reasonably high. I think the problem for Boris Johnson will clearly come in the future once the economic costs of the crisis have been counted and the sense that the government has not handled all of the issues around the pandemic well. If that feeling grows, then clearly the threat to his political position will also grow.
Patrick, thanks for joining us on the line this morning. That was Patrick Diamond, Associate Professor of Public Policy at the Queen Mary University of London. And something I picked up there was the feeling that the lockdowns may go too long, which is something that we heard from Tony Nash earlier on Market Watch as well in the US, right? This sentiment that a bit of resistance to all of that.
Yeah, nothing like a bout of incarceration in a hospital to make you realize that this is not something to be sniffed at, no pun intended. I wonder whether Donald Trump would have treated the whole pandemic differently if he himself was incarcerated in a hospital with the COVID-19. You know, he seems to be just going around with this same old bluster and arrogance.
Yeah, so, you know, Boris Johnson ran quite a tight campaign when he was campaigning to become Prime Minister. So I'm just wondering why he hasn't lent that kind of same management skills to what's going on here. So, but, you know, I think it's just a reflection of the UK, right? Public discourse is always very lively and vibrant.
Yeah, so that's it for the international side. We've actually got a poll running on Twitter right now. Who should pay for COVID-19 testing? At 72% of our voters are saying government, 15% saying employers, 5% saying ourselves, 8% don't know the answer to this. Right now, we're going into a few messages, and when we come back, more discussions on this with Mohan Ramakrishnan, Labour and Industrial Relations Lawyer, on the requirement of testing for employers returning to work. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.